Welcome to episode 258 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on November 29th, 2021. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. Today, Scott has been officially banned from buying anything until after Christmas, and he and Ben discuss two new preview capabilities for Azure Virtual Machines. We talk about a potential use case for conditional access policies with service principles in Azure AD, and then wrap up geeking out a bit about Xbox Cloud Gaming. Did you buy a new Mac on this Cyber Monday? Because they have sales.
I did not.
I'm disappointed, Scott.
Nothing. Same Scott, same equipment. You're stuck with it.
I'm going to ask you again at Christmas.
Okay.
If you bought the new M1 Max, and you'll probably tell me the same thing.
I will tell you that holiday times are a very trying time for me because there's a moratorium that goes into effect on me being able to buy anything for myself.
Oh, that's right, because you need Christmas ideas to give people.
My wife considers me to be someone who's very hard to buy things for because once I see something that I like and I know I want it, I will just go and buy it myself. And I know the thing that I want. Don't get me a keyboard. I don't want just any keyboard. I want the special keyboard with the right kind of clicky clacky keys, but in the right configuration and the right size and the right color and right materials and all those kinds of things. So I'm picky and difficult when it comes to that kind of stuff. And I'd rather just buy it myself. Holiday time, yeah, I have to make a big wish list in Amazon and I make it public. And that's where my family can go to find things for me.
Tell people. See, I have the same problem. One, it's the certain configuration, but two, it's what the stuff that I want that I don't just go buy for myself is so expensive that the people that want to get me Christmas presents don't want to get me the stuff that I don't just go out and buy.
So I run into that too. I just leave that stuff off the list and I'll eventually buy it later and it'll be fine post-mortem. You can always find like little things to buy, whether it be books, could be something for a hobby you're into. I have been cooking a whole bunch during the pandemic here. And getting into just a lot of, lately, it's been a lot of Dutch oven cooking.
Okay.
Even like cookbooks with Dutch oven recipes would be a good thing. I can always use more tongs, more scrapers, more wooden spoons, a new garlic press, like anything like that would be just as good as an electronic device. So I try and put like stuff like that on the list and see where it goes. And then, of course, if people find other things, they find other things and it's all good. But all the long-winded way to say, I'm not allowed to buy anything for myself until January 1st, or at least until December 26th.
Did not do any Black Friday or Cyber Monday buying this year.
I did not. I was glamping in the mountains anyway, and the signal wasn't great. So I've been disconnected from work for the last week. And that in and of itself was fun. Sat on a little creek in Georgia where they stock it with trout and watched my brother-in-law fall in the creek a couple times while he was fly fishing and just sat on swing by the creek and listened to it bubble by for a week. It wasn't horrible.
That sounds very relaxing.
Yeah. Airbnb is still a thing and I love it.
Yes. And their stock shows accordingly. But that was not any stock or financial advice. Legal disclaimer. Anywho. Yeah, it was Thanksgiving, Black Friday here in the US. So before Black Friday, I was having a hard time getting motivated. And truth be told, it's not very often that I do it, but like for 4 days, I started looking at work a little bit yesterday, but Saturday, I barely turned on my computer. I just disconnected, got a bunch of stuff done around the house, did a bunch of projects done around the house, hung stuff up, built a fire yesterday. It's cool enough here. We built fires, sat out around the fire, played with the kids. So it was kind of nice. And I am feeling fairly relaxed, refreshed after the last 4 days. Even though we did not go anywhere, I am jealous of the babbling brook, but I was able to disconnect for a few days, which felt good.
Yeah. Always good to take a step back. And I know it's getting into the slow time in many parts of the world, but especially like here in the US, December is pretty much a notoriously slow time, especially at Microsoft where I am. Like, lots of people have tons of banked vacation. It's a use it or lose it kind of thing. So over the next couple of weeks, we'll start seeing folks just drop out for, you know, a month long vacation. And it gives me lots of time to work on all the other things that I miss missed in the last 5 months that nice. I need to get done that are part of my annual performance review.
Ironically, like the next 2 weeks for me are crazy busy. I'm like you, usually I start seeing slowdowns the next couple of weeks, but I'm teaching like 4 days this week and I'm teaching 2 or 3 days the week after that. And then teaching again a couple days the week after that. So I really don't have any slowdowns on my calendar until the week of Christmas, like the 20th. The next 3 weeks, it's for whatever reason, are a little busier than normal. So it was probably good that I took a break.
Yeah, I can't fault you for it. Everybody should take more breaks.
Yes, but the news didn't. Well, the news maybe took a break. I was so disconnected, I haven't even caught up on blog posts from the last few days. And there probably wasn't a ton over the last week or so, but we do have some news, some things to chat about. Some of these maybe a week or two old. Some of them were the last week. Some of them are just stuff we've found interesting that has popped up lately.
So I get us started, I guess.
You want to start? All right.
Let's go down.
Welcome back, Scott.
Let's go down a virtual machine rabbit hole.
So, Scott, do you know how many files are shared outside your organization? Or are you sure that every team in your Microsoft 365 tenant has a valid owner? Guess what? ShareGate's got your back. After helping thousands of customers move to Office 365, they've learned that success in the cloud involves more than just migration. That's why they created ShareGate Apricot, an automated governance platform for Microsoft Teams and Microsoft 365 groups. ShareGate Apricot can help you answer questions like these without planning unnecessary restrictions on your users. With ShareGate Apricot, you get full visibility across each team's lifecycle from creation all the way through to archival. You can automate manual tasks involved in identifying problem areas like inactive or orphan teams. And you can collaborate with team owners on corrective measures to keep your teams tidy and secure. That's also why they've combined ShareGate Desktop, their trusted migration and content management tool, with ShareGate Apricot in a single subscription so that you have everything you need to be successful in the Microsoft cloud.
There's been a couple of things that have come out over the last month, 2 months. I'm not exactly clear on timelines. Like sometimes I see documentation before it's public and it all gets mixed up in my head. But there's a couple of really cool things out there that you might want to take a look at if you are doing any type of virtual machine automation when it comes to standing up your virtual machines. So provisioning, when you are running your virtual machines and you need to run automation at scale across them. Say you have a Windows fleet with 10,000 Windows virtual machines and you need to deploy a new registry key kind of thing to deploy at scale and run some automation that. Or you're looking at even potentially decommissioning and bringing things down. There's like some new stuff out there that could be pretty nifty for you. So the first one is run commands. And we've talked about these in the way back when. Are you familiar with run commands? Do you remember these?
I do remember chatting about these. I will be the first to admit I'm not super familiar with them outside of what we have talked about when it comes to the run command and the run command feature.
Gotcha.
And since we talked about it, it's like on my list of things to play with along with about 500 other things. And I just have not had a chance to play with them yet.
So I would highly recommend that you take some time and get hands-on with run commands, particularly now that there's a new capability that's been released. It's out in public preview now, which is called a managed run command. So just for a brief refresher, the run command is an Azure feature that you can use. You can basically run scripts against your virtual machine that execute in the context of the VM agent that's already running on your virtual machine. So every Azure virtual machine, like if it's created from an Azure gallery or even those that you load from on-prem, you should be putting the VM agent on. Like if you're doing a migration, things like that. Anything that has the VM agent on it will be able to leverage the run command. And the run command is great for Windows machines, you can go ahead and just run a quick PowerShell script as like a one-off if you need to. You can do things like run a quick bash, a bash script on a Linux box, like super nifty. They've been really helpful in the past for like one-off diag and troubleshooting in particular. You might have a virtual machine and a VM scale set that you can't RDP into. And occasionally like wonky things happen and you want to reset your RDP settings, you can just go ahead and do that. There's a built-in run command that can make that happen. But they were limited. You had to go ahead and run them from the CLI, from PowerShell, or from the portal. And you were running single instances of those commands. You were limited in what types of output came back to you because the output was basically coming back through the VM agent and then being spit back into something like the portal to, hey, show me like the standard out or the error stream for this script that just ran. And then you might want to go and run the next script and the next script. And then you ran into a thing. You're like, oh, this script is going to take me an hour to deploy. Now I can't run it in the run command because it's going to time out and it's going to do some weird things. That all goes away with managed run commands. So you can think of it as an updated version of the run command that exists today. It still uses the VM agent to execute scripts on your virtual machines, but it has a bunch of just enhancements and nice things in it. So probably the biggest one that's there is now you have support for run commands directly through ARM deployments. So if you're doing things like creating ARM templates to deploy your virtual machines, you can now execute a run command through that ARM template just as a part of the deployment. And in and of itself, that's a handy thing to have around. You can deploy one or more scripts. They now support a parallel execution or sequential execution. So you can have your cake and eat it too. You can set custom timeouts, which means you can go beyond the default, which I believe the old default was like 20 minutes. But now you can have scripts that run for hours or days if they need to, because it's in an ARM template. Now it picks up support for passing secrets around. So you can have things like secure strings coming through directly from your ARM template. So as a parameter, maybe like a password that needs to be run to go ahead and get your script. Other nifty thing about it is that you can set the user that the command runs as. So it used to run in the context of just the default kind of super user, but now it doesn't do that anymore in that you can go ahead and specify a custom user and a custom password along with that. And then the other cool thing you can do is you're not limited by where the output goes anymore. You can just run the output straight to Azure Blob Storage and just have your output captured as raw text and raw objects that you can go back and look at later. So if you have this fleet that you want to deploy, like I'm standing up a new VM scale set, that VM scale set has 25 VMs in it. Each one of those VMs needs a bunch of automation to run against it. You might have used like Azure Automation in the past to do that. Now you can just bake that directly into your ARM template. You're not spinning up an extra Azure service in something like Azure Automation. You're not running a post-deployment script, like a PowerShell script on your desktop or anything like that. You're just executing scripts as part of VM deployments. You can do things like have dependencies. So you run multiple run commands. So you can have kind of command one and command two can depend on command one because it's a first party ARM object now. So you can fully run those dependencies however you want to within your ARM templates. Super nifty, super kind of powerful stuff. It goes above and beyond the custom script extension. It's not the hybrid runbook worker. It's just the run command, but it's a better run command than it was as a first party managed object that's out there now. So you have lots of ways to execute automation now, which is cool. Or a new way to execute automation on your VMs.
Wow. That's a lot of updates.
So the old ones are still there. This is in preview, but you should go play with this one too.
Yes, I am going to need to go play with this one. And I was thinking even with like output being stored to blob storage, you could start doing all kinds of stuff then with the output instead in terms of analyzing it, reports on it, all of that type of stuff.
Yeah, so you can do things like not only chain commands together, but you could have a command that executes a script and maybe goes and looks at blob storage to see the output of a previous command. Did this thing happen in the way that I wanted it to? Because these are just run commands that are already out there, you can do things like run them against your existing fleet. It doesn't have to be for new VMs, anything like that, but it should make it a lot easier when it comes to that world of how do I run automation at scale across all of my machines that are out there today, particularly if you're not familiar or you don't want to stand up services like Azure Automation. Like you just don't want to go down that path. It's more kind of simple scripts that you want to run, or even you just want to run the built-in scripts that Microsoft provides. Things like you want to enable remote PowerShell. Microsoft has a built-in entity in the run command. It's just got a command ID, enable remote PowerShell, and you could go ahead and run that across your fleet pretty quickly. You could do things like enable Windows Update. You could do the RDP settings, resets. You can set RDP ports. Like there's a bunch of built-in commands that can bootstrapped and up and running as well.
Yep. And this hit preview too for not just Windows, but Linux as well. I see we have managed run commands for Linux that's in preview as well as for Windows that we can go and...
So a run command is a run command. Now it's just a first party kind of native ARM object. Yeah. So it falls under Microsoft.compute, virtual machines, run commands. And then you can have N run commands that run with within that. So that could be something like a script that's downloaded from like blob storage. Could be a script that's downloaded from GitHub, right? Like maybe you just store like raw deployment scripts in GitHub. You can actually have the run command go ahead and download those scripts for you. And then they'll call that script with the parameters you pass in. You can chain, link together, do whatever you need to. Super nifty, super powerful, and just another tool in the toolbox, right? When it comes to kind of VM deployment and spinning things up.
Yes. So since we're talking about VMs and toolboxes and tools and preview features, there's another one that came out or is now in preview around VM application packages that gives you a new way to install applications on your virtual machine. So this is when I feel like I saw the headline for this. You sent it to me again, but we'll post a link to it. And this is a new feature that has come to virtual machines where when you go set up your VM or configure your VM, underneath the advanced section, you can now select VM applications to install. So this gives you the ability to go out, take application files, and download them and install them on a virtual machine after deployment, and then even set up some other things around those applications, such as expiration of those applications and other settings around those. So it instead of maybe using some PowerShell or some script to go out and download the applications and install them and script that all out, you can do it as part of these VM application or this VM application feature now on your virtual machine.
Yeah, so you can think of this as maybe an extension or analogous to the existing image gallery that's out there today. So if you're creating VM images, like custom VM images, you're doing things like generalizing and sealing and returning to the out-of-the-box experience, say a Windows VM, or you're using the WA Linux agent to go ahead and do that same kind of bootstrapping experience on Linux, but you can continue to go down that path. Like lots of people have golden images within their environment. That image has all of their security tooling baked into it. It has things like maybe default registry keys, default configurations, things like that. You can certainly continue to go down that path, but now you have this additional capability, which is going beyond a virtual machine gallery, and it's giving you an application gallery. So you can now take your applications, and an application could be many things. It could be an MSI, it could be like an executable on Windows, it could be a TARD file or a gzip, it could even be like an RPM or like a deb package on the Linux side of things. You can take that package and upload it to a gallery as well. And then that application can have multiple versions of itself. Any good application would, right? It can be V1, V2, V3. You have custom metadata around those versions. You mentioned like expiration of an application. You might want to go ahead and say, hey, when V3 comes out, I want to deprecate V2 and that's end of life in 6 months. So that way virtual machines that are being deployed and they're just trying to grab the latest version of the application, they'll go ahead and grab whatever the latest is once that end of life is kind of hit along the way. But the really cool thing is because it's going out to a gallery, that gives you things like replicas in a given region. So you can actually spread your applications out with multiple replicas in a region for additional durability. You can go ahead and push your applications out globally. So you can do things like have your gallery replicate maybe from East US over to West Europe in Amsterdam. And you just get all that baked into the service and it's functionality that's available to you and ready to go. So it should feel fairly familiar if you're using things like using ACR, like container registry, or you've used the existing VM application gallery, things like that. So once you've got an application ready to go, like you've got your package, like your executable, your MSI, your tar file, whatever it is, again, as just a first party ARM object, you can go ahead and have those deploy whenever you want. Now, the cool thing here is with something like this, like they have built-in support for something like deploy if not exists inside of an Azure policy. So if you're governing your environment through policy and you say, oh, hey, my security team says we need to deploy this new firewall agent to all my Windows virtual machines. In the past, you might have done that with the run command. Like you could go out and deploy that thing out to blob storage, store it on GitHub, whatever it is, download it, run it, see what happens, capture the output, see what's going on. Who knows? That could take a while. And where does all the output come to? And how do you actually verify that application A made it onto VMs A, B, and C in a concrete and durable manner? VM applications will give all of that to you. So now you can just execute something like your application installation through a deploy if not exist policy. Deploy that policy to your resource group or to an entire subscription and have it run through and get to where it needs to be. There's some limitations, as with all things. You're limited in the number of applications that you can deploy per virtual machine. So that's currently limited to 5 applications per VM. Application size might be a limiting factor depending on the application applications you're deploying. So you're limited to 1 gigabyte application today. There's also no guarantees of reboots in your deployment scripts for applications. The run command, you have parameters you can pass in, like maybe you want to do like a silent installation or pass in some other kind of parameter that's necessary for a particular installer. So if you do have things that require reboots, you should just be making sure that those are like the last things that go ahead and deploy within your environment. And you can't have multiple versions of the same application on the same VM. But I think that limitation is kind of reasonable. Much like the run command, this requires the VM agent. So if you're dealing with gallery images, awesome, you're ready to go. If you have brought your own images or you've developed your own on-premises, you want to make sure you're going to deploy the VM agent on them so that you can take advantage of functionality like this.
Yeah. And you did mention like the gallery a few times. And just if you haven't done this before or played with this, that's the Azure Compute Gallery, which was formerly known as the Shared Image Gallery, because we all know Microsoft likes to rename things.
I'm stuck in my old ways, right? I still think of it as the Shared Image Gallery.
Yes. So it is now the Azure Compute Gallery. So it does require you to have one of those. And when you go create this application, upload it, it goes into the blob storage. So it does have to be publicly available, or you can use a SAS URI for those files and that storage. So there's some of those prerequisites that you need to set up too. It's not like you can just go point it to some random file or installer on some website. It's get that installer, create that application, get the Azure Compute Gallery, all of that stuff set up to deploy these.
Yep.
So there are some steps to go through to meet those prerequisites in terms of getting it to a state where you can deploy these applications to your VM?
Yeah, I would say it's fairly straightforward.
It is. The documentation looks good.
And once you've done this, this is another one I would recommend you get hands-on with, just to get a simple application out there and then understand the experience for deploying it through something like the ARM side of things, maybe through like the CLI or PowerShell, or through the portal. The cool thing is, once you have these applications developed and the galleries out there and ready to go, when you're doing things like walking through the portal blade to create a virtual machine, there's going to be a new section in there on the advanced tab or the advanced blade, whatever we're calling them these days, where you can do things like extensions, which still exist and are still a thing. But then you can also select applications to go ahead and deploy. And you can deploy one or more of those. And they'll just go ahead and run with whatever their configuration gallery is.
Yeah, absolutely. A nifty addition.
Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at IntelliJink.com/podcast. That's IntelliJink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business.
So you want to do one more announcement looping back this? We'll go with this one. We talked about conditional access a week ago, 2 weeks ago. I can't remember. But this is one you also brought up. And it's a use case, a scenario that you don't often think of. And I can't remember when this feature was made available, but it is the ability to actually do conditional access, not just for users, which is the typical way. I've set it up. We've talked about it in the past, is manage conditional access for your various users so they can only access certain applications from certain locations or only have certain functionality based on the configuration of their device. But this is an article out there from, I think this is a third party, right? A third party product talking about creating conditional access policies and doing it for a service principle. And the scenario that walks through in this documentation that we talked about was a third-party application that needs access to certain resources in your environment. It's interacting with Office 365, Microsoft 365, Azure. SharePoint's a common one. You see a lot of applications that maybe work with email, but the services are hosted on these third-party providers. And maybe you want to actually lock down your environment, or your environment's locked down to your users, but you also want to lock it down to these service principles. A lot of these third parties will come from known IP addresses or known IP address blocks, known locations, that type of stuff. So it's going through now setting up conditional access policies for a service principle that these third parties may use, and then being able to lock it down from this third party's known IP addresses or known locations, so that not only are you now preventing any malicious activity using a user account, but it helps you to prevent any malicious activity or getting into your environment using one of these service principles that are configured.
I think this one's been out there a while, but it was...
I think it has.
It was new to me because I never think about it this way. When I think about conditional access, I think about users as entities. And those are my end users sitting at their desks. They're my mobile users who are at home on their mobile devices. I'm not thinking about that as service principles in my environment, or even service principles that come from me purchasing third-party products. And that was just a new way for me to wrap my head around it and go, oh yeah, you can use conditional access for that. And that's super nifty. That is a great just control for you to have in place to be able to do something like say, hey, we bought this SaaS product from vendor X, and we can guarantee that vendor X is going to be the only thing that can run this thing because we're able to do things like create named locations in Azure Active Directory. And ultimately, that SPN has to go ahead and authenticate with us anyway. So it's a good way for you to mitigate risk with not only your SPNs or your app registrations from your internal applications, internal business processes, but potentially also from third-party products, right? If I'm deploying a third-party SaaS product that, say, requires read access to my subscriptions or requires maybe even some higher level contribute access to do something on like the billing side of things or to be able to read metrics, something like that, whatever it is, I really do want to be able to lock those down. And I think it's just a great call out to have there. And it's potentially one of those things you just want to have kind of in the back of your head when you're walking into it. If you go, oh, I'm not licensed for this, like maybe you do need to be licensed for this for like certain, like these types of subsets of scenarios that are out there.
And even to think about, because it just wasn't something I've necessarily thought about either, is if you've already deployed conditional access, go include your SPNs in this if you can, because you deploy it a lot for users. Maybe you've never thought about deploying this for SPNs either. And this is a potential way to extend what you've already set up, secure your environment even more. Because it's not a scenario that really even crossed my mind before of using conditional access to lock down these SPNs by IP address or even a country location. So a great thing to think about and go configure if you're already using conditional access or if you're not. I was talking to somebody the other day. I'm going to get on my conditional access soapbox.
You never.
What?
I said, you never.
No, I don't have any soapboxes I like to climb on. One, I wish Microsoft would include this with every Office 365 subscription. I think this is one of the most important features, functionality from a security perspective that you can roll out. And I think not enough companies do conditional access. Yes, it's an extra license. You need to do Azure AD P1. You don't have to do EMS. EMS is up to like $10 a user a month. Azure Active Directory Premium P1, I think, is like in the ballpark of $6 per user per month. What you can do with conditional access now, the functionality that's there, to me, if you can in any way convince your company to upgrade, I think it is well worth the cost for conditional access. And most companies I know are going to Azure AD Premium. I do have one company I'm working with right now. They just went to Azure AD Premium specifically for conditional access. Again, I wish it was included with every plan. It's not, but it's also a great motivation to upgrade to Azure AD P1 if you're selling products for Microsoft. So sure. I speculate that might be why they leave it there. But if you haven't looked at it, if you haven't used it, this is by far one of my favorite and I think one of the most beneficial features of those premium Azure AD licenses. Okay, I'm climbing down off my soapbox now.
Well, that was a quick one.
It was. I didn't have any rants about it. I really like this feature, other than maybe it's not included by default.
Someday it might be, but today is not that day.
Nope, so I'll have to wait. But with that, Scott, I should probably go wrap up a little more work. I have a child in my office that just woke up from a nap and is looking for somebody to pick him up.
That's okay. I got kids running around in the background behind me too.
I keep seeing them flying through in the background.
I imagine that's like a video game on the TV back there or something.
I can't quite see what they're playing.
I can't either.
I was looking at...
That's the way I prefer it.
Oh, see, here you're going to get me going on another tangent. I actually started looking at Xbox controllers for my Mac the other day because I was looking at different games and I knew Microsoft had it out there, but I just kind of stumbled across it, was the ability to stream Xbox games.
Yeah, you can do xCloud streaming.
The xCloud streaming to your browser, and it works like Edge on the Mac, but like all the games require you to use a controller. So I don't have any Xbox controllers around that are Bluetooth enabled, so I can't hook them up to my Mac. And they are actually on sale the last few days. So I was debating if I wanted to pick one up.
See if you know somebody who works at Microsoft and can maybe hook you up with a friends and family discount. If only you knew somebody like that.
If only I knew someone, I should ask around and see if I can find somebody that can do that for me.
I'm sure you can. Yeah, the xCloud stuff it's kind of magical when it works. There's definitely some latency there. It is dependent upon your internet connection. But when you're at home, like, should be totally fine. If you're on the go and moving around and you're transitioning between like LTE and 5G ultra wide and you're just driving or something like that, trying to play a game in the car as you're a passenger in the backseat, like, not going to work that well. But if you're just at the house and you've got your computer in front of you, or if you don't have an Xbox, but you do have Game Pass, ooh, really powerful stuff. They've even started, like, not to go too far on a tangent, but in the latest Xbox update, so I have a Series X in the other room there.
Okay.
The one big limitation with the X, like, it's powerful hardware, it does all the things it needs to do, is games are just getting bigger and bigger. Like, the other day I went to download Forza, and Forza was like 150 gig download or something like that. So it takes a long time. Updates are massive. Like, I've got Flight Simulator on that thing. Like, space is at a premium. I've got hard drives hanging off the back. You can't run all the games off of hard drives or even like the internal, like the special Seagate hard drive, because some of them require certain types of storage and they've got to run off the internal SSD. So they added a feature that if you don't have the game installed, when you go to launch it, if it's applicable to xCloud, you get a little button. There's like a series of buttons. One will pop up from the store and say, do you want to install it? And the other one says, basically, play from the cloud. So you can just stream it straight down without having to install it, try it out, see what it does, how it works for you. Not great for every game. Like, I found it wasn't great for Forza, even on like my home connection. It had like just a hint of too much latency in it. So I had to download that one, install it. But I've been able to uninstall some games. Like, my kids play a lot of Minecraft Dungeons. That just works and does all the things it needs to do. And yeah, it's a very cool, nifty capability. Try it out.
I'm going to have to, because I don't have anything newer than an Xbox One right now. And I was looking at that. I'm like, I don't really, my kids aren't old enough. I don't want to upgrade and it's expensive and I have all the Game Pass. And I'm like, maybe I should just try streaming some of the stuff from the cloud. And same thing as you, like, my Xbox, I have 4 gig drives hanging off of it for apps and games. And I'm like completely out of space. So it is time to give this a shot.
Yep. Should get on it.
And with that, we can end our tangent. So enjoy the rest of your weekend, Scott.
Cool.
Enjoy your short. It's Monday. Enjoy your week. It's not our normal Friday. Enjoy your week of work.
We'll be back on Friday.
Yes. We will talk to you in a few days. If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.